Members, let's settle down once again. Now we've got Council for Medical Aid Schemes. They're going to be giving us their strategic plan. So we'll give over to them. They came late. Unfortunately, we're going to repeat and do the introduction as we usually do. And I know on their side they've got new people who don't know us. So they've got old ones who are keeping the memory of the institution. But for the sake of the new ones, let's introduce ourselves so that they can know. Your meeting, this is the Portfolio Committee for Health. It's one of the engines of the National Assembly when we do the oversight, when we make the laws, and so on, during the work of Parliament. So they will tell you who they are, after which you tell us who you are, and then get on to the business of the day. Okay, can we start with you, Manuel, and tell us who you are?
Good morning. I am Beatrice Ndlovu. Good morning. My name is Morosi Sakhalidi Swai, a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Patrice Hanare, a member of the committee.
Good morning. I am Hilda Sizavele Mseli, a member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Lebogo Grace Dube, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Tanwe Kenny, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Charles Masilo, MP. Yes, it is. Good morning, Charles Masilo, member of this committee, MP. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Nakali Bisokis, Magali Petrusha Kopan, Kalibu.
I understand.
By Auditor General as to how they should interrogate you. So they're going to be interrogating you on certain things that you're going to be telling us.
So that you know that you're working.
Myself, I'm Vivek Okwana. I'm just sharing, just guiding the process around recognizing that I'm going to be doing. Prof. Fariava, you are leading the team, and I know you are new, so you are very young. I don't think you have even completed a year. You are still very young. So you can tell us who are in your team. And then after that, you can tell us who's going to be doing the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'll just do the honor first and introduce the team of the Chairperson of Council. My name is Monabi Kanjo, the Registrar and the Chief Executive of the Council for Medical Schemes. Chairperson, I am pleased to, and it gives me a great honor and a privilege to introduce to you Professor Yusuf Joe Wariaba, as a new appointed Chairperson of the Council at the Council for Medical Schemes, or CMS as it is known. The Minister of Health, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, appointed Prof. Wariaba with effect from the 29th of November last year, after the retirement of Professor William Chick in 2011 and the resignation of Dr. Joyce Melane in 2012. Prof. Wariaba brings to the CMS a wealth of experience and an illustrious career that spans over 50 years in the field of medicine, all of which was in the public service and as an activist for human rights and health. Prof. Wariaba is a specialist and a consultant, as you referred to him earlier on, Chairperson, with special interest in hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and a specialist in nephrology, which is diseases of kidneys, is in so. I therefore hand over to Professor Wariaba to address the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gancho, and thank you very much, Chair, and on behalf of Council, I would be great and thankful that you've given us the opportunity to make a presentation on with strategic sort of direction. It is, in fact, important that we recognize the oversight function of the portfolio committee, because this in fact impresses on everybody that every regulatory body has to be accountable. So this oversight function impresses on them. As you've heard, I am newly appointed, and I'm very grateful to the registrar and other individuals that work in the Council for Medical Schemes for enlightening me. I'm going through a learning process at my age again. So I'm studying again regularly, and I'm trying to learn very, very rapidly about the intricacies of the private sector as well as the scheme itself and how it functions. And it's enormous. This is a major responsibility. And I'm hoping that by the end of the year, if I were to be given an examination, I would pass. Hopefully, I will not just scrape through. But I think that it's important to point out that whilst the council has been doing, I think, an excellent bit of work, that there are some very important issues they've handled, there are still future challenges that are coming through. And with my training, I'm hoping that I could bring into the forefront one aspect, and that is the quality care that people receive. You know, we're doing well in terms of regulating the schemes, that they're ensuring that there's adequate governance, that the interests of the beneficiaries are attended to. But my concern is that when we look at the interests of the beneficiaries, or if we're going to act in the best interest of the beneficiaries, we also need to ensure that what they get is good quality care. And I'm hoping that with the skills that I have and with the skills that are present in council, that that is a whole new area and challenge that we're going to attack. The other aspect of the challenge is that our profile nationally, and also that because we are receiving a lot of complaints, and you will see in the presentation that the number of complaints are increasing, and not only increasing, but also the type of complaints that are increasing has to do with clinical issues. And as people become more and more aware, we're going to get more of this. So this is another challenge. And we are grateful that the minister appointed in the appeal board Justice Nguyen. So that will, in fact, add an additional element of excellence in the council. And I'm hopeful, or I'm confident, that we will be making more progress than we had in the past. I think that the council, from what I've seen in the short period, has been doing well. The one aspect that I mentioned to Dr. Gancho was we call the Council for Medical Schemes. Unfortunately, the people think that the Council for Medical Schemes is there to protect medical schemes. And I think that we need to get the concept across to populations, particularly beneficiaries, that the council is there for the beneficiaries and not there to protect the medical scheme. So there are some of these challenges that we have to face. But I think that I will now like to hand over to one of our members, Dr. Boshoff Jenkamp, who will present our strategy for the next few years. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Prof. Forever. You can take over. But I think it's time for me to introduce Dr. Zobufa, who's coming from the Board of Health Funders. I think it's if you could he's the main opposition party. But he's here on invitation just to make sure that he listens that he's ready to ask him. Okay, Dr. Kosha.
Thank you, Chair. In introducing the team that will be talking to us, as you mentioned, Dr. Kosha Stenekamp is the strategy in the Office of the Registrar and for the Council for Medical Schemes. on our budget, our strat plan, and annual performance plan, I want to bring it to the attention of the committee that the Minister of Health has indicated his full support for our 2013-2014 plan, and has requested the Minister of Finance to concur. The medical aid industry in South Africa has experienced an increase in contributions alone from 30 billion rand in year 2000 to about 110 billion rand in 2013. The context of the presentation today, next slide, is to discuss the challenges to our strategic goals and present the actions we undertake to protect those goals, and you'll hear more about them in a minute. It is also the intention today to discuss the proposed budget requirements that are required to ensure that we contribute and we continue to discharge our mandate as per the Medical Schemes Act. To that end, the strategist, Dr. Steenkamp, will present the challenges and our responses to those challenges, including the proposed amendments to the Act, after which the Chief Financial Officer will present the budget. The last slide on my side, next slide, is just to outline once more four goals, the strategic goals that we hold dearly, that we committed to continue in achieving on them. Goal number one, access to good quality medical scheme cover is maximized. Goal number two, medical schemes are properly governed, are responsive to the environment, and beneficiaries are informed and protected, the point that the chairperson has just made. Goal number three is CMS should be responsive, and it is responsive to the best of our ability to the needs of the environment, those being an effective and an efficient organization. The last goal is that the Council for Medical Schemes provide influential strategic advice and support for the development and implementation of strategic health policy, including support to the national development process. I therefore give over to my colleague, Joseph Steenkamp.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, and members. The Chairperson has asked me to just highlight four important things in this presentation. You'll see the presentation typically deals with a usual running of the organization, the things that challenges we face on a regular basis. But there are four specific items which I will point to which could be potential change the game plan significantly. The first, of course, is NHI, and as the presentation shows, and the position is we will continue regulating medical schemes because it will be a long time that we will have medical schemes as NHI developed, and we will continue that. And with our experience and exposure to risk pools, how risk pools must be managed, how the governance structures required for those financing, the experience, knowledge, and we have with the execution and discharging of the provisions of the Medical Schemes Act, we will certainly enjoy working with the department on developing NHI further as we go ahead. The second important thing, Chairperson, is that we will talk about the Medical Schemes Amendment Bill, which has been approved by Council and will soon be submitted to the Department for further processing. This amendment bill essentially is a result of 10, 12 years of experience in using that act to regulate this industry. And so it's a lot of rework, a revamping, reorganizing the entire bill, with a key focus being on how to improve governance within medical schemes. And that is the key element of that bill which will come forth. Thirdly, we're all aware of the gap cover debate in terms of the short-term insurance products which are being developed, which has a very, very negative impact on protecting sicker and older members of the public. Because those are risk-rated products, they are not subject to the regulation by the strict requirements of the Medical Schemes Act. That then would create the potential for large sums of money to flow through those insurance for profit, not properly regulated in markets, into healthcare, and that will leave the sicker and the older member of society and young unborn children. Those are the ones who are left vulnerable if we allow that cover products to continue. Then fourthly, and a very important thing in the presentation is we're very excited about the fact that the Competition Act has been amended. The Competition Commission now has proper powers to do a proper market inquiry into the healthcare environment. We've previously reported to committee the areas of market failure which we've perceived in the healthcare market, and we're very glad and we will work closely with the Competition Commission to make sure that a proper investigation is done and that we can come with a rational response to the problems which are identified and documented with a proposal towards regulatory changes in this environment, which is going to take a few years. Chairperson, those are the four things, that the highlights. Let me go back to our strategic goals. There are three things that we do on a daily basis. We protect members' access to medical schemes. There must be no discrimination. You cannot discriminate against sick and old people. You cannot discriminate in your status of health and or your gender or any of those other things in the Act. And that we have to protect. Medical schemes and all regulated entities have to be properly regulated. They must be responsive to the environment, and they must run clean governance systems. That is the second goal that we want to see. The third is, we as a regulator, living off taxes, of levies, we must be efficient, we must be effective, and must make sure that we do our jobs well. And that's the third goal. The fourth goal, of course, it's every year we have to review and say, what's happening here? Are we doing our jobs? And then we have to advise the minister on any matters relating to private health care. And that advice should then, of course, through our changes, which we can effect ourselves, and some other regulatory changes in the regulated legislative framework needs to change to make sure that this environment stays alive. So our first goal, what are we doing to make sure that good quality access to good quality medical scheme coverage is maximized? We see this growth, medical scheme membership growth, and it's been growing faster than employment growth in the past few years since 2006 with the introduction of GEMS. But over the decades, since the 80s, there's a very close relationship between employment and number of medical scheme membership. And we currently, at December, there are 8.7 million members. But people must have access to get access to these benefits. And I've just taken out, to keep the slide simple, that's just those three lines. In 2011, we're spending almost double that which we spent in 2000 on private hospitals per member. Specialists have gone up from just over 100 rand per person per month to 200 rand per person per month. That's all a large increase. The interesting thing to note in this slide is the close parallel between the increase in specialist costs and hospital costs, because our specialists are the people admitting to hospitals, and so their activities are reflected in higher hospital costs. On the contrary, if you looked at medicines prices, which has been regulated since, has remained flat. So what we're showing to you is those three very important, the key cost drivers in the medical schemes environment. But to get access to this benefit, how do you arrange the healthcare financing to make sure that access to medical schemes is fair and is non-discriminatory? The key thing is one must be cognizant of your risk pool and how does one protect your risk pool. If we look at provisions of the Act, there are three critical elements, provisions in this Act which protect this risk pool. First is community rating. So regardless of your stage of health, regardless of your age, if you get access to the same option, you pay the same contribution. And that is to prevent discrimination, to prevent risk rating. In the short-term environment, gap cover type of things, you can say, if you're sick and old, I'm going to raise your premium, or no, I'm not going to incent you. I don't want you. You present a bad risk. I don't like your heart attack. I'm going to influence my insurance product finance. But in this environment, we say you have community rating, everybody pays the same. Open enrollment. The scheme must take you, even if you had a heart attack last year. The scheme cannot refuse you that cover. That is what the Medical Schemes Act says. The benefit covering says there are certain minimum benefits which the scheme must pay for. I mentioned heart attack, and again, that's the minimum benefit.
insurance environment can say, no, if you've had a heart attack last year, we're not going to pay you again. But the medical scheme hasn't got that luxury, because the law says that is a minimum which you must cover. Unfortunately, that arrangement is like... Yes, children.
Jefferson, my mother always said to me, you don't understand power, you must just shut up. Jefferson, thank you. That's our point today. Okay, the point is I'm making is that we have that risk pooling arrangement is of course threatened by affordability. Because if we're not employed, we don't have income to pay for these benefits, to get access to this issue. And if we don't control costs, this whole framework falls flat. Because that threatens the whole medical scheme's environment. Other measures which are not introduced in our legislative framework, but which has been done frequently in other countries, is things like systems of risk adjustment. Because typically, you can imagine now, all the sick and old people go to one medical scheme, the young and healthy goes to the other one, and that happens. Schemes arrange it like that. And then you have no current subsidies coming from the young and healthy schemes to the sick and old ones, and that undermines the whole concept of risk pooling. It undermines the whole concept of social solidarity in healthcare. Another way of enforcing that is through having mandatory cover, where if you're employed in a certain environment, you must belong to a medical scheme. Obviously, with the coming white paper, we don't know how governments are going to deal with a specific issue in terms of mandatory cover and risk adjustment, because the whole white paper in NHI changes the whole game plan of how we operate, and we have to be cognizant of that as we proceed. But then, which threats do you forget to fear in non-discriminatory access? First of all, if you look at the risk pools, in the past 7 years, the council has been collecting data on the health status and the demographic profiles of medical scheme members. So we know what their risk profiles are. And in 2009, there were about 250,000 in the very high risk pools and another 250,000 in the extremely high risk pools. What that means is that 500,000 members were in schemes that were threatened due to the fact that they sick and old people belonging to them. This has changed in the short 2 years to a number of almost 1.5 million people now in very high and extremely high risk pool schemes. And this change is unfortunately the relationship of shifts within risk pools within the medical schemes environment, and it threatens the existence of those members and their future cover, and which we observe and reporting on. Another issue is the unfettered growth in short-term insurance, the for-profit, risk-rated, unrestricted access gap cover products, which undermines these risk pools. As I mentioned, those products discriminate against people who are sick and old. They don't accept them. If you look at the age profile of the members they take on, it's just an employee being in the middle. No babies and no pensioners. They're not there. They're excluded. And that, what that does, the scheme can be very clever. So look, I want to make profit out of gap cover. So we have an arrangement with the administrator. Create that gap cover in our scheme. Because we have benefit limits on certain areas. We don't like old people. We know old people have to be in hospital a lot. So we put a limit on the hospital and say, go outside, get your gap cover. Pay for the difference. So you create a gap in the scheme cover, then create the benefit available outside of the gap cover. What does that do? It extracts young and healthy people from the scheme to get the gap cover, but the sick and old are left there, and they have to be facing their own risk. And that is a discriminatory part of gap cover, which is so bad, because it's been sold as a cheap alternative. It's only a cheap alternative because it covers only the young and healthy. It doesn't cover the sick and old. And the sick and old are the people we as a society need to protect. So,
employment and food provision in the PMB regulations, and that leaves members most vulnerable. Members are then left vulnerable to face these huge costs for healthcare, for catastrophic type of healthcare events. And we are enforcing this as good as we can, but we know it's not a pervasive problem, it's not a crisis. But it does happen, it continues, and we continue discharging our mandate. And then there are enrollment provisions which are being challenged. The government has refused to respect Transnet members. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Transnet members, the old railway workers, they're all no pensioners. They're in the 60s and 70s. That's a very high risk group. They cannot take care of themselves. Now, they tried to join Discovery. Discovery refused, in spite of the ruling by the registrar, in spite of the ruling by the council, and now they're taking it to appeal to the appeal board. Because someone has to take that responsibility. Then GEMS is also, we argue, GEMS must take them because they're government employees. GEMS must take care of them. GEMS appealed the decision by the registrar, took the council to the after decision to council, appealed council's decision, and said they must take them on. They went to the appeal board said, take them on, they're appealing that decision from the appeal board, and that will soon be heard in the High Court, that issue of who's going to take care of those patients. Then we have increases in utilization, tariffs, higher tariffs, increasing the use of technology, which all present affordability challenges to medical team members. Costs are going up. And in terms of cost, we don't have a health price determination framework. We're seeing excessive charges by some unscrupulous healthcare professionals. I've seen charges of 150,000 rand for a 4-hour operation.
Mm.
That type of things we see. And that happens because there's no health price determination framework. And the Health Profession Council is they have no reference against which they can act against this type of behavior. And so what happens, because the tariffs and the technology goes up, teams are paying more and more of the expenses go towards the PMP and those mandatory benefits which they must have, and they have less for their discretionary benefits. And that's causing a problem. At least Treasury has come to the party with the tax credit system which is in place, because it's a much more fairer way. In the past, in the old system, if you were a high income earner, you had a larger tax benefit by belonging to the agency. This is the reverse now. If you're a lower income, you get a higher tax credit. In this manner, it's a better cross-subsidization from high income earners to low income earners, which is an improvement on where we were. So what did council do to this issue? First of all, we started a proper research project and then looking at what could be done to deal with this disparity in the risk pools. I mean, we've talked about Transnet, almost all of these urgent, toxic mergers that we're facing over the past years in terms of merging and having to merge and being liquidated relates to imbalances in their risk profile. That has to be addressed somehow, and we will make a recommendation to the department during the 4-week course coming year. We're continuing our interactions with the Department of Health and Treasury to get consensus on the demarcation regulation. We've proposed a range of amendments to the PMB regulations to address some of these unreasonable issues which we're finding in the current regulation, unreasonable charges from healthcare professionals at PMBs. And that was submitted to the minutes of March in 2010. We're excited about the commission's market inquiries, and we've met with the Minister of Health and GEMS to try and avoid this court action. The meeting was that we would have, I'll try and set up a meeting between the Ministers of Finance, Trade, Public Service Administration and Health to discuss the funding of this requirement, where what's going to happen to those members. Thank you, Chairperson. That's goal one, the access. Next thing is how do we make sure that medical schemes are properly governed, that it's responsive to the environment, and beneficiaries are informed and protected. That's the second part of our duty. Briefly, I just want to, I can actually skip this slide, because I've previously shown that hospital costs are going up, and the private specialist costs are going up, but we can put certain barriers to that administration cost that they have to charge by law. We can do that. But we do need certain amendments to the Act to strengthen the regulatory powers in this specific environment. Another issue is council also asked us to say, we know how much money gets paid, but we don't know how many much people actually pay out of their pockets. You know, we don't know, and we need to get a better understanding of that, and we'll be doing some research in that respect, working with Stats SA in that regard, using existing inquiries and social work. Governance in matters in medical schemes, Chairperson, if we look at what we do, by having a Medical Schemes Act, we prospectively regulate the environment. That influences the industry. The industry comes back and we get certain concurrent regulations. We have some concurrent regulatory functions specifically dealing with the finances. We meet certain schemes on a monthly basis. We get statutory reports on a quarterly basis. So we, all the time we know what's happening. That, of course, influences how we regulate prospective. Retrospective is when things have already gone wrong. Then we need to take certain action, respond back to the industry. The industry responds back there, and then it goes back and it changes all that in a way that our prospective regulation works. The accreditation of schemes we do, the registration of schemes we do, and changes to legislation. All of that improves the prospective regulation. Now things are finally balanced, it's fine. But we see there's an increase in our retrospective workload. In 2008-09 we had about 0.4 complaints per year for every 1,000 beneficiaries. This has now increased to almost 0.8 or 0.7, almost doubled again in those 4 years that we've seen. The other thing is we see in 2011 we've only had 0.1 opinions per 1,000 clinicals. The 1,000 beneficiaries per year that's related to a clinical complaint. In other words, the doctor said I must have this treatment. The scheme says no, it's not at the level of care, there's no proper clinical evidence for it, or it's too expensive, it's not affordable, it's not cost effective, and then the complaint comes to us and we need to investigate that and make a recommendation to the registrar to make a ruling in this respect. But that's the nature of our work. Becoming more clinical than it has been in the past. And we get this feeling that proper prospective regulation is not working well as it should. What we have seen is much larger pushback against retrospective regulation from our side, and it is beginning to cloud our activity, and retrospective regulation could dominate the work that we do. And we all know the umbrella prevents and clear, and that is causing some problems. We still see governance failures. We're not trying to come here and say the medical scheme industry is corrupt and everyone is there's no governance, but we still see that. And we still see there's strong administrative influence on the state of some schemes. And there are instances where there are not a proper arm's length distance between the scheme and the administrators. And some boards don't have proper expertise and don't lack the skills mix to run these. Can you imagine the internal of 106 billion rand a year? Simply division by 100 schemes, more than a billion rand a year, has to be taken care of by these trustees. Huge sums of money, it requires some skills. So our response is, we must strengthen those governance provisions in the Medical Schemes Act to prevent many of these things, to prevent the delays we frequently experience in being able to intervene and put a scheme under curatorship. And we need to do that, and the later slide in the Medical Schemes Act will talk about that. But we need to continue doing what we can within the legislation we have. It's not powerless. You see that some schemes are under curatorship in response to the type of government failures. The big matter is also which came up more during council. We have so many managed care organisations out there. Council is asking us, why do that? What do they do? We must do our work and continue determining the exact role, the value added that they're doing. And we've started the process to ask the fundamental question. Do managed care organizations contribute to the healthcare environment by reducing costs and improving quality? teaching about alternative dispute resolution to resolve complaints faster and cheaper. We all know about the high legal bills, and we've got to find a way of dealing with some of these issues. If we look at dispute resolution, there's alternative dispute resolution and education by public authority. Now, as an organ of state that has a certain regulatory mandate, we have to follow formal litigation, formal administrative decision-making processes, and these rulings really are not alternative. They are in accordance with the prescripts of the Medical Scheme Act, and we have to follow that. But there's a big room for alternative dispute resolution outside of our environment where that private decision-making be made by the parties themselves through negotiation and mediation. And that is the decisions of schemes and principal officers where members could engage at that level. Secondly, if they're not happy about that, the next issue becomes arbitration. So what do we do? We propose amendments in the Medical Scheme Amendment Bill to make sure that alternate dispute resolution mechanisms have been exhausted at the scheme level before that complaint comes to council. To reduce the workload, keep it closer to home. Because if you can solve your problems in home, you don't need to see the pastor. You can do it at home. And that's what we want, and because it resolves better at that stage. And the final thing this process currently, there's a huge number of appeals against decision by the registrar, which are outstanding. And we're currently piloting this on a voluntary basis with schemes or without the balance, and making use of an external arbitrator or negotiator and mediator to actually resolve those issues and save money in that process. Let's go through, Chairperson. The third one is ourselves, what the office, in relation to the office, what are we doing? The big issue that we bring here is because office accommodation is inadequate. We're occupying an office building, two buildings in the same office park, and now those buildings are full, and we have to move to the third building, and it's becoming impractical. So, I will deal with how we deal with that. Another issue internally, many of the issues, problems we're facing in enforcing legislation is many of the processes followed by council at the council level in terms of the functions it has in terms of the Act are being challenged on procedural grounds, and it's because the Act is not clear on on how council should make this decision. And also appeals committee proceedings are frequently challenged because there are no rules in the law in terms of how to do. This was the first issue for Goal 3. A tender was awarded for new office accommodation, and we'll be moving to Centurion in May. In terms of the rules, council still has the power, actually, to make rules, and council has now started making rules to govern the council processes and govern these appeals committee proceedings. And in the bill, we've also made further provisions to further govern the way that council does its business. The fourth goal, CMS provides influential strategic advice, and there are things that we should be doing differently, and we're working on that. Because there's been very slow progress on the publication of the proposed DMV regulations, which has been submitted in March 2010 already. The whole demarcation regulation is also a challenge, which we need to resolve. The medical schemes face and regulated entities face certain statutory fees for registration of brokers, etc. Those fees were last adjusted in 2000, and the price determination issue was a problem because we're seeing these increasing costs. We're seeing the high cost of specialists, but we can't really, it's not in our mandate to act on that. So council delegation met with the minister, and he said he'll look at those PMB and statutory fee regulations, but they're still with the Department of Health legal unit, and we're waiting that feedback to come back from there. In terms of the location regulations, the Ministry of Health supports strong regulation, and he understands we cannot discriminate against sick and older people. That's just a no-no. When it comes to the financing, that's a different issue, but as a health, cannot allow that. And in the project
insemination, of course, we're very excited about, and the market inquiry, and we'll be involved with that. And in terms of the NHI, we must ask us, we must just continue regulating this environment and develop along with the NHI process as it develops. Chairperson, the last slide, I'm sorry about the long presentation. In terms of this medical scheme bill, I think the important thing to say is there's a whole rearrangement of the bill. It's a whole rearrangement of the way things are organized. But the key matter is we will make sure that there are major changes in governance in medical schemes environment to make sure that we do away with potential perversities where members, board of trustee members can personally profit from being a member of a member of that board. And that is a very critical matter that we will address in a strong way. So it's a scheme money, members' money goes to healthcare and not in someone else's pocket. So that's our big thing that we fight. Thank you, Chairperson. The rest of the slide comes from Dan.
Oh, you know, you can sit down with the hospital.
Thank you. Thank you,
Chairperson.
Honorable members. We're presenting as part of the strategic plan our budget that we need to execute this objective that we're facing in the strategic plan. Our budget proposal, Chairperson, is about 110 million. And as we indicated earlier on, the legislation alluded to the fact that the contribution of the industry is about 170 million. If you compare our budget with that, it's 0.1% in the national contribution. And in this kind of challenges that we're having, I think we should be operating at a much higher budget than we're having at the same time. But this is the budget we're proposing, and I'm just going to be at a high level because the summary, the details are in there. The major indication that we want to give you first, in terms of the whole budget proposal, our levy increase, the levy that we impose on the community about 26.29, which is an increase of 9.85%, and in monetary terms, rand terms, is only 2.40 rand per year per member. And we must take into cognizance and I was just indicating that we're only charging on principal members, not on the social beneficiary of about 8 million that was indicated earlier on. So our total levy therefore is going to be 26.79 this year, and as the registrar has indicated, we already have support of the minister for approval of this levy, but that approval process, the Minister of Finance must give us concurrent, because without that we are not going to be able to collect levies from critical instruments. And I think that process is ongoing. Now, in terms of the major drivers of our budget, we're spending a lot of money, Chairperson, on the legal fees. Today's effort addressing you, we've spent this financial year that will end in a week's time. We spent already about 8 million on legal fees. And in the nature of our work as a regulator, we have been challenged. I mean, it's just a litigious environment, we have been challenged. And we're spending quite a lot of money on the retrospective aspect of our regulation, which is, in essence, these legal challenges. And we only are proposing a budget of 6 million because we are limited in terms of the resources or the extent to which we can go. Because as you are aware, the Treasury is advising every government department, every government entity to cut down on expenditure. But that's where we are. And obviously also some other cost drivers is the salaries that we pay we proposed those new positions in order to strengthen our prospective, all those aspects of our prospective to regulation. The peer has the prospective regulation, this is the concurrent regulation, and the other represent the retrospective regulation in that regard. So these positions, as they propose, they are married to the goals, the approach that we want to regulate, as well as our four goals of access to medical aid schemes, how the entities must be managed, and how the CMS must be governed, and internally, and our strategic advice to the minister. As you can see, the major expenditure this year is going to be in the management, internal management of the CMS, which is the first draft there. And in the main is because, like we have indicated, we are moving offices. We've gone through a tender process. We're moving to a bigger office space because we've grown as an organization. I mean, since 2000, the office started with about 5-10 people. We are now at about 100 people. So the office space that we're renting currently is too small. So that is why this graph, in terms of the internal management of CMS, is bigger this time around. And we compare it for the past 3 years, and in terms of our prospective and concurrent regulation, retrospective regulation, I think we're seeing a balance there, because in terms of retrospective regulation, although the bar is still high, but we've indicated that there's still a lot of complaints that we are receiving, there's still a lot of legal challenges, but most of the legal challenges we are winning. That is a positive aspect of that. We are winning all these legal challenges. I'm sure you see the publication in the newspapers. We've won a lot of our legal matters. But Chairperson, we're also proud that as we propose this kind of budget, we always resist in audit in that regard. And we're very proud as an institution that over the past 11 years, with these limited resources that we have and these huge challenges, we still managed to get out clean as from the audit. They've given us that clean bill of health. Chairperson, I'm not going to go into the details, but we will take questions related to the budget as detailed in the strategic planning booklet. But we just wanted to give you the highlights, the major issues there and the total budget as compared to the industry that we are regulating. But we are very available to take questions related to the details as contained in the hearing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Poshoff. Thank you, Dr. Ganso, and Chairperson. That is the report. These are their strategies. In fact, they are telling us what is going on. And they are even giving us their challenges. There's this part that talks about amending the Act, which I think is key. So members, that is that. Do we think that they are using the money in a relevant way? But the interesting thing is that the money that you have comes from the medical aid schemes themselves. Now, how do you regulate somebody who pays you? They say the more powerful person is the one who's got the money. So now they give you money to regulate them. Isn't that causing problems for you? But I think it's that I've always been asking them myself that question, but it's something that is going on. Maybe it's going to come up in that bill. What you usually do, Prof, is we usually allow them to ask questions and then you respond to all of them.
I was just going to comment on your comment.
Okay.
And just for clarity, that it's not the medical aid that I'm paying, but it's the beneficiary.
I've always been worried about the legal fees, but I don't want to comment much to the members, but I've always been worried about this legal. But when you're a regulator, people always want to take you to court to prove that they are right, but it's good that you are winning those cases. Okay, members, that's the strategy. Mapi, Makenye, Ndatelehet.
the office that you are going to be getting as a children, are you renting it or are you going to be buying it as your own office? And then if it gets smaller, you move to another one. These days there is a problem of genetic medicine. How are you coping with them, because they seem to be coming up every day? Thank you.
Maybe let's clarify, because it might be genetic. Is it genetic,
Matthew? Generic.
Generic, or you mean generic?
Generic.
Genetic. Genetic
biological. Okay. Honorable Ken.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation, which is clearly numbered. Clearly numbered. We commend you for that. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the pages, because some of these issues appear in many pages. Page 6 coupled with page 12 and page 16 and page 20. That's why I say I'm going to do. You talk about the cost of, control of costs, and in the amendment bill, you say you want to improve the governance. Now, the access to benefits. Now I'm thinking of the beneficiaries who don't know what to do, who are being discriminated, not treated fairly by the schemes. And also noting that sometimes the medical scheme you get the medical scheme having a 100% benefit, but when somebody goes to the doctor, some of our beneficiaries don't know the Consumer Protection Act. Then that has more than 100%. They end up when they claim to the medical scheme, only 100% is being paid, and the 150% now is just gone. To the claims, because people don't really know this Protection Act. How can we, therefore, what is your strategy? How can we popularize and also now, how can we popularize this so that people know what to do? Because some of our people are not really sure of what is going to happen. Why they are discriminated? What is your advice in that case? Also, there are those schemes that we say they are under curatorship. How can we know? Also, how can we know those that are not under are under curatorship? And also, what do you mean by those that are under curatorship? And also, how can you give advice in these cases so that we know which way to go as beneficiaries? And then how can you intervene in such cases? What is your outreach strategy so that people are informed about this appeal board? Because people don't know that they'll go to an appeal board, so they don't know where to complain. And also that last year you recommended that CMS will reach a broader audience according to our recommendation last year. What is your outreach strategy therefore? And then what has CMS done to address staff turnover or recruitment drive, noting that this unit has small staff complement, though it deals with a number of cases? So lastly, last year you told us that about the CMS reported that it has got the intention to use software called Google Cloud. What has happened now? Has that been taken on board? Also, the price determination. Why is, I don't know, maybe I'm confused, I don't know, why is the levy not the same when you go to these areas? Even those medicines that they are over the counter, you'll find that they have got different levies. Get a levy that is higher in other cases, and then levies is not there in some other cases. just for interest sake, why is it not? Is it not legal? Is there no regulation about the levy? Thank you.
Yes, let me also thank the presenter. Actually, I had questions on office space and your staff complement. I think you answered as you continued your presentation that you'll be moving into a bigger space in May in St. Jerome. So that was my concern. You said the staff complement increased from 10 to 100. So that has been clarified. You talked about the amendment bill. I am looking forward to that amendment bill. Maybe you could give us the exact date. When do you think we will get it here? Yes. You see, your name confused me. I thought you represent medical schemes. You're a mouthpiece of the medical scheme because you trade counsel for medical scheme. But also, you know, to clarify, because now my relationship with you is at ease. because we have clarified that you represent the beneficiary. So maybe what just next to that S, add beneficiary. Okay? So that you clarify once and for all. I'm talking about, you see, having unemployment, it's a challenge to the government. Now you bring in a new concept of temporary positions. How long are these temporary positions? Why can't we leave them permanent positions? Positions that you are talking about on page 48. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I think it's good that you came down. Maybe members, though he is not part of CMS, if there are certain questions that pertain to him, the Board of Health Funders, you might have to answer a few questions. Because some of the questions are just going to be general. I can't remember. Who was the... Oh, it's that Honorable Khanade. And then I know if you lift your hand up, Pat will lift her hand up. But that's just it, that's Manga.
I thought Maurice would raise her hand before me. Because I'm always comfortable to speak after she has spoken.
You have to follow her.
No. Look, there is something which worries me. It does not necessarily deal with the regulation of, but it is a practice which worries me about, especially gynecologists, who have now made an industry out of giving birth through sterilization. Because to me, it impacts on the beneficiaries at the end of the day. But it is not the medical aid which causes that particular problem. It is them who decide that all children will be born on Thursday in this hospital. It's their decision that no child will be born on any other day. So in most hospitals, the private hospitals, specifically private hospitals, where they make a date on this day, all the women will be given birth and they will come, and he's only doing that on that day, on Thursday. Only decided that to me it's very problematic because it's a very expensive operation, but it also impacts seriously on the beneficiary's medical aid. And that practice, it has. I think the medical aids are also being knocked. Everybody is being knocked, but only one person and one hospital benefit out of that thing. To me, it's unethical, but it's not your responsibility. But you somehow. I think you have got to be able to say how you deal with unethical behavior by doctors, which affects the medical aid. it's very difficult because you are not, it's not really your field, it's other people's field. You are supposed to be dealing with this type of practice. But I'm just bringing it to your attention. And that one is of my own, but there's something which has been brought to my attention also in terms of your report, that your foreword looks like a cut and paste of Professor Peake's 2011 foreword. You must check that. That has been brought to my attention. Please check it. And if that's the case, maybe you will explain. Maybe your computer is on auto mode. In present day 2013 report, and then it goes on auto mode. Please check that about whether it's still the same. In the other thing, the other point which I wanted to raise was the expenses. That your council members' fees has increased by 60%, your legal fees by 40%, and the investigation cost by 37%. But when your complaints adjudication is decreased by 30%, you know, which I thought must increase because the more people become members of the medical aid and the more intelligent they become, the more their capacity to complain increases. And it's very interesting how your telephone and fax remain the same when everything goes up. Unless you are now using Neotel or Selfie. So Selfie always says that I'm not advertising any of them, Chair. But it's very interesting how they advertise themselves. Yeah. The issue of prescribed minimum benefits, there's been a lot of legal challenges as far as that is concerned. I would like to feel comfortable that you are winning the war. As far as that is concerned. I'm sorry, I'm not your fan when it comes to that. But I really think that it's something which we have got to be able to deal with. That's really the issues we raise in the forum.
You must understand that he's coming from Manga and Bloemfontein. That's where most of the high court cases, the fighting, that's where the fighting ends. Honorable Kopan, I saw your hand up. Was the hand up?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, when during the presentation it was still stated that one of their goals as a council is to protect the beneficiary and to inform them. But in terms of protection, I'm a little bit worried because over the media, I'm happy the Board of Healthcare funders are here today. I understand they had their conference where it was stated that about 22 billion, the money that was being fraudulently claimed by different healthcare professionals. So I wanted to find out from the Healthcare Council, in terms of their objective or their goal, they said they want to protect the beneficiaries. What are they doing? What steps are in place to protect the beneficiaries in terms of this fraudulent claim that has been done by Health Professional Council? And is there any systems or mechanisms that are in place? Because there is a company that claims to be a prior institute. They say they are having a mobile validation system that helps to protect this type of fraudulent activity. Have we ever had a consultation with them? Why is it only one medical aid that is using that system? Because we are having many medical aid. If really we are serious to protect the beneficiaries, can we inform them to your other medical aid? Thank you.
Thank you, Manu. You have to hand up. Oh, you finished your question. Okay.
The question I had has been asked by Kopan, but what surprised me in that report was for males, hysterectomies were done, and for females, circumcisions were done. And it's really.
No, South Africa is changing country. So you might find the certain things changing. You know, but there's female circumcision. Female circumcision is actually done, but I'm not sure whether the medical aid should pay for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
just
going
to
We are now going to be moving into the what is the state of healthcare finance or medical aid going to be, especially with the national development plan 3 years from today? Where do you anticipate things to be? Thank you.
Yes, you can follow in that another now.
Ke a leboga modula setso, ga ke lebogele mantswe a gago a o a buileng gona, but ke lebogela go mpha sebaka. Ke lebogela sebaka. It appears the entire staff turnover rate section on page 41 was merely copy and paste. Does it say that since you last saw us, your staff compliments remain the same? Thank you.
Thank you. You can answer them. It depends. Maybe the register will start, and then you can decide to go.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, honourable members, for the question that you have posed and pointed out and want us to clarify. Quite a number of them, and we're going to deal with them in turn with the officials in the Council for Medical Schemes. But before that, I'm going to ask Prof. Bariava to deal with this. He's got a couple of few questions that he would like to personally attend to, and I'm going to give him an opportunity to do that first. Prof.
Thank you for those questions, and I think that the importance of those questions is that it gets us to think, and also it may pose future challenges that we have to attend to. So we're grateful for this question. I think the first thing I want to answer is the issue of the ethics of having a specific day for the caesarean section. Now, one of the things that has happened is that if you compare caesarean sections that are being done in the public sector versus the private sector, clearly the amount of caesarean sections that are done in private sector are increased. There's much more. And that sort of thing is related. There are two aspects to it. One is that this is done because of convenience for the doctor. Mm. Because if the doctor has to wait for the patient or the lady to go into labor, he may have to go in at different times and all that. So they look at convenience. But there's also a possible perverse incentive to this, in that it's financially and it's quicker, and also that it is often also convenient for the hospital that they have a specific list, the anesthetist that they get there knows that that is the day for that. And I think all this is problematic. The issue is that when there are this type of issue, we need, and if this is a recurrent phenomenon, then the professionals that are involved should in fact be, it's an issue for the health professionals. This is the important point, that there's an element of over-servicing. I think that to do too many caesarean sections is over-servicing, because many of those could have delivered normal vaginally. So clearly these are the issues that Health Professional Council will have to attend to in that regard. There was another question regarding ethics. What was the other one on ethical issues there? The biologics, I think Dr. Boshoff-Steenkamp will answer that, because that is that's a burning issue. What are there, which are the ones that we know benefit and which don't? My just immediate response is that where the benefits are minimal, and the cost of biologics are very, very high. Should we support that? But there are areas in medicine where biologics have been shown to benefit, and clearly those need to be supported. I think that's what I want to say.
Maybe before you come, Dr. Lander, I think when it comes to that question that came from Dr. Khanna, which we're trying to answer, Prof, I think there's another part. Even looking at Dr. Sengam's graph, where the specialists and the hospitals are actually increasing, I think it has to do with the fact that the doctors are being regulated, the medical aids are regulated, but there's somebody who's not being regulated who does as they wish, that is the hospital industry. And I think for the doctor, I mean, it's the hospital that says, I've got this day for cesarean sections. So the doctors have got to fit themselves in. And they are not regulated. I'm not sure, somebody might correct me. I don't think they are regulated. So something needs to be done in that area of looking at the hospital itself as to why do they have a specific day for this, or is it between the doctors and the hospital they decide on a particular day? But I think the hospitals need to come into that. Okay, Dr. Kanto.
Thank you, Chair. The other question, the CFO will deal with the question of office relocation for rental or for buying. The biologicals, the strategist will deal with that as it has been indicated. And the discrepancies that might be found in forward on the cartel based, and again I'll defer that to the Chief Financial Officer. But for the question that has been asked briefly, Chairperson, with the who pays the levies and the bills, the question has been asked that in fact the beneficiaries that do pay is not the medical aid schemes. The high legal fees that we're budgeting for them in this coming financial year is 6 million, and yet as we stand right now we're at 8 million on expenditures on that. We're winning the cases, all the cases that end up in court, we do win them. The challenge is they take a long time for them to be concluded because of the appeals process that has been outlined. So the council, the members of the committee can take comfort in the fact that the money is well spent. It is we win the cases, as it has been mentioned. It just takes forever for us to get to report back on those fixes, but when they do, we make it known. The discrimination issue, the question was, please best advice on how to avoid and in fact prevent the discrimination. The presentation did indicate that discrimination in any form or kind is not tolerated even by the medical schemes. At where there has been discrimination on age, gender, it's even now we do not approve of discrimination against obesity. That is the latest, one of the latest rulings that we have had. And therefore, when such is not found in the Act or in the regulations, we use the rulings from the Appeals Committee and the Appeals Board, which is going to be chaired now by former Chief Justice Ngwebe, as a form of standard operations procedure on our side. Principally, what that means is that whenever discrimination is found, it should be reported to us as the Council for Medical Schemes. If it is not resolved at scheme level, which then we will take necessary action in terms of the Act and in terms of the regulation. Curatorships that we have and we continue to have whenever we found failures in governance, knowing those that are not under curatorship and yet might be in the same boat as schemes that are under curatorship, as and when we pick up difficulties or mishaps in governance, our routine inspections units, which we have, and we do that in terms of specific section in the Act, and that would be Section 44 of the Medical Schemes Act in particular, as and when we pick up these discrepancies, lack of poor governance, we institute corrective and intervention measures, which some of them end up in curatorship. So yes, it is true that we might be having some schemes under curatorships, and yet others are not under curatorship, but they continue. Their time is coming, Chairperson, when we do our inspection. It takes a bit of time, as you know, sometimes to pick up this, but their time is coming, and we will pick them up, and in fact subject them to the corrective measures that is found in the regulations in the Medical Schemes Act. The strategy to know the appeals board and the work that is done by the appeals board in the to make members and beneficiaries aware where they can appeal whenever they find they do not find comfort or they are aggrieved by any of the system within the scheme. It has been mentioned in the presentation earlier on that the best preferred route is obviously to resolve the complaints at scheme level, and in their rules they must have these internal dispute resolutions mechanisms. We encourage that the Act, specifically Section 47 of the Medical Schemes Act, indicates that the Council for Medical Schemes must attend to the complaints whenever they arise. And that is why, at the moment, the office and the Complaints Adjudication Unit in particular is inundated with many of these complaints. Alternative dispute resolution, as it was mentioned and presented earlier on, is one form of addressing this. All of these are meant to, and we should make members aware of that appeals process that was outlined so elaborately going on forward. Our education and training unit does this on a regular basis. They go out to did reports to this committee before that our training, education and training unit is all out educating members and educating principal officers and board of trustees on this. We will continue to do so. It is work in progress, but there are strategies that we're at least attending to make members know about our peers process. The staff turnover challenges that we have that started 12, 13 years ago, to be precise, now at 5 for the current 105 years, we've got a poor attrition rate, if one wants to put it that way, within the office of the Council for Medical Schemes. And that turnover, we always find out what are the reasons for the turnover of the people who will be leading us and joining us, and those who join us, they join us after a due process of appointments and advertisement. And those who leave, we always want to find out as for why. We do find some of the schemes pinching quite a lot of our staff members because of the experience and the skills that they have, and we're using them, some of them, to the entities that we do regulate. And we're not comfortable with that, and obviously the council is supporting us as the office in making sure on the staff retention as strategies. The price determination progress, Chairperson, there was a question on the price determination progress. I think it has been mentioned earlier on. Although this part of the responsibility falls outside of our mandate, our interactions with these other regulators, in particular the Health Professionals Council and the Competition Commission, are informing that process. We've had, after the Competition Act has now been amended successfully in effect from the 1st of April, we've been invited by our core regulator, in this case the Competition Commission, to assist them wherever we can as a backroom support structure on one hand, on the other hand to become part of the witnesses during this market inquiry that will be taking place and that eventually will end up in competition in the commission for the pricing commission. We have had, we're in contact with the Department of Health. It has indicated to us that commission will be in place sometime to come, but at least work here has now started. So we will become an integral part of the price determination going on forward, even though it is not our primary mandate to do so. We software, Google and cloud, and I'll defer that to the strategist to report back on in detail, except to say that the Google cloud computing and so on, it is I'll leave it to the strategist to deal with that as well. That's a specific question. Medical Schemes Amendment Bill progress, I think was outlined that the council has passed the resolution, and that process is now being passed over to the department and the ministry, and it will eventually come in. And before you, members of the committee, we're really looking forward to your supporting that when it hits the parliament. It's a speedier process, legislative process. You'll be much more aware of that than we are, that the legislative process takes a bit of time, but at least now it is out of our hands. I would leave probably the question of the name of the Council for Medical Schemes to when it comes to the Parliament, and some of the public comments that will come, we'll leave that to yourselves to come back at the end of the initiative amended that the name of this regulator should be ABC instead
high temporary positions of the staff that we have in the budget that we are asking for in the next financial year and not have permanent staff members. Thanks for that question, and to me it shows the confidence that you are having now been informed of our strategy and our operations going on forward, that in fact we need to have more certainty and more skills to come into the office, and we would love to make more permanent staff members in order to confront the challenges that we are having. Obviously, that has got an impact on the budget, Chairperson and members of council. The budget, as you've seen, that the levies will be limiting it to 9.35% on a year-on-year basis for our next financial year. We would like it to be more. If people were to do that, and it would probably cost more our budget, and from the levies impact to be more than 9.35%, and the Minister of Finance will probably say this is more than the inflation rate, annual inflation rate, and so on, and might not approve of our budget going on forward. The office colleagues will tell you would have preferred a budget that is much more than what we're asking for its approval now. We certainly would have liked it more than that. The considerations, treasury considerations, came into it, and they brought it down to 9.35%. If you were to have an ear to the Minister of Health, of Finance, if you were to have an ear to the Minister of Finance, for him to look at our budget and be more lenient and give it more, we'd be glad to receive that, because we've got so much work that we would like to do, as you have heard. Prof has answered the question on the ONG profit and the cost and determining when a child age and time of children being born. I think that matter is a specialist matter. Thanks for giving an input to that. Lastly, from where I'm sitting, Chairperson, is the PMB investigations complaints, and the cost that we see is going up, and yet our cost for fax telephone cost seems to be remaining low. CFO, I would like you to deal with that aspect. I can only say that because of us being mandated by the Medical Systems Act and the Ministry and Department of Health to investigate and to attend to the complaints and determine the needs and resources that are needed and required for that, we have on an annual basis have to have an increase to be in line with our requirements. PMB's legal challenges up to date, all the PMB court case that we had and with loggerheads with the BHF, I'm glad to announce that we have won that case. We are in constant contact with the BHF in order to deal with those aspects of the PMB that we feel is a gap in having harmony with regard to that. Because the case as it is now on the PMB, I can safely say, Dr. Sotofar, it's very complete, will continue. PMBs means exactly what it means when it comes to payment in full, and therefore the payment in full of those PMBs is the practice that we are currently following within the Council for Medical Skills. It does not mean, Chair, that there are no challenges when it comes to that, particularly when it comes to the perception, which is becoming reality, that this payment in full is a blank check to many of the service providers, and therefore they are using it as such. Whatever they charge, they are paid at cost, and that is problematic. But that's a matter that we're dealing with outside of the fact that we have won the case, but the battle is still in place with regards to just the challenges that they have identified. Protection versus the fraud claims in the recent conference that has been published in the newspapers, the BHF and a couple of you of the funders have come up with that and they have identified, and I think that it is shown that at the end of the day, whenever money has been mentioned earlier on in our presentation, whenever any resources that are paid by the members and beneficiaries to a medical aid scheme do not go to the health of the individuals, it is problematic. If this fraud obviously doesn't go to the care and the health care of the members, it is problematic, and therefore we do feel vulnerable on behalf of the members that their protection is not covered foolproof because of the reports and the cases that will be taking place. We hope that there will be a follow-up from the legal point of view on those fraudulent claims that are identified by the funders in this case. The council in its last meeting has indicated that the regulators themselves, not NHI and the CMS and the National Health Development Plan, I think, Chairperson, that is a matter that I'm sure the parliamentarians are grappling and are dealing with. But there is some report that come out with regards to the implementation of it as part of the NHI, even though it is outside of the mandate of the CMS to do so. The Department of Health and the Minister and yourself would be dealing. But we do know there are pilot sites that are out there that are currently taking place. We do know the fact that there's been announcements on the NHI fund and its establishment by year 2014, and we're further aware that the National Health Act has, as early as when it was passed after 1994, it does make reference to the establishment of the district health system, which to a very large extent talks to the NHI fund. I'll let the CFO to deal with the question specifically referred to the area of work, and Dr. Poshoff can come to deal with other stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Ganjo. You must remember just one thing about the amendment bill, that this year is 2013. In less than 12 months, we'll be having elections. And if you don't bring it quicker, you might find that you'll get a new team here. Because the people who employ us, we don't ask for jobs, we don't apply for jobs. It's the people who elect us. They might not elect the whole process this year. You might get new, which will ask you to start all over again and tell them what. So it needs to come now so that we can quickly deal with it and get over it so that you do your work properly. That goes to you, Prof. Adela, too, that it's not only about fast-tracking the bill, but even the blood pressures and the diabetes going to be out of control. When you start doing the list here, start competing, the blood pressures are going to come. So be prepared to manage all those conditions that are going to be coming to you. Okay, see you.
Leadership must come.
Thank you,
leadership in
the issue of our office rental and our money. We're still going to live in Australia. When we went out on tender, we consulted with National Treasury because in terms of the PFMA, as public entities, you are not allowed to take the financing leases, but you are allowed to take operating leases. Financing is meaning you can bond building, like you and I buy a house, you can go to the bank and be financed. But we've concluded this contract now, but there's an option in that contract that we can buy this building, and we'll enter into negotiations with National Treasury to assist us in that regard, because this building today costs about 110 million, which is the total budget of the CMS. We cannot afford it. We simply not afford it at this point in time. But there are processes underway where we will engage National, because National Treasury do assist. They've also said that to us, it is better to buy than to rent. So we will do that. Now, in terms of us moving in less than 5 years or so, but that's not going to happen, because when we went out on tour, we've made some specific requests to the bidders that, and we've made some also our own analysis that said the growth of this organization over the past over the past 10 years has gone in this particular trend, and we'll be able to accommodate that growth in the next 10 years that we've signed this contract. So we'll not move in less than 10 years. In actual fact, we've proposed to council that they allow us to take the entire building so that we occupy the entire building ourselves, and in that way enter into negotiations with the view to buying what's National Treasury assistance. The issue of expenditures, the telephone expenses and legal fees, I'm sure the legal fees we've explained ourselves in terms of why are they so high. The telephone expenditures, we're using some technologies where, for example, a landline to a cell phone is rerouted at a cheaper rate. So we've put efficiency measures with regard to controlling this kind of cost. That is why our telephone bill is a bit sick. It's mainly increased by inflation, but it's not going to be high. And in actual fact, even staff members, on their personal costs, we do make them to pay for their personal costs up to a particular limit. We do not just allow people to make personal calls and then your bill, you find that your telephone extension runs up to 2,000 and there's no consequences in that regard. If you see that pattern, you pay. In fact, we pay every month, so that's why our telephone cost also reduces. In terms of why the complaint expenditure is static and not increasing, as we've indicated, we are a service-oriented organization. Complainants come to our office and lodge complaints. The cost of us in that regard will be in the salaries of people we employ in the complaints unit, because then those are the people who are actually servicing the complainants coming to them. We do not go out and resolve complaints outside the office. Most of the complaints are either faxed, emailed, or they are walk-ins. In that regard, the expenditure related to resolving complaints is in salaries. That is why, I mean, we're employing about seven legal officers in the complaints unit alone. So that's quite big. I think the registrars also touched on this whole issue of temporary positions. We're saying that internships at this point in time, but clearly there's a need. The need was identified for this work to be done. If the budget allows, we would have employed them permanently, because they are not paid at the lower scale. This internship, as you know, they are not. They will not be paid at the level of permanent employees. There was a question around consumer outreach programs, which was asked. We try in our level best at this point in time, and then the stakeholder relations unit have introduced concept of stakeholder endowments. That is a way of reaching out to our consumers. And our consumer education unit, if some of you would go to the ranchos, we buy a space there so that when people come there, we explain ourselves as to why we're there as a region. Because of our limited budget, we've taken initiative, for example, now that says when medical aid schemes issue you with membership card, at the back of your membership card, we want to have our address and our logo at the back there, and explaining ourselves as to we are a regulator of members. If you have complaints, you can come. So if you are a member of PharMed, you'll see maybe if in your marketing materials, we've asked schemes to say at the back of your membership card, you'll see Council for Medical Schemes and explaining ourselves who we are. Mm-hmm. In that way, we'll reach out to a number of members of medical aid. That is the innovation that we're taking, because we employ only about 3 people in the consumer education unit, and we're regulating about 98 schemes. So you can see the proportion there. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll also defer to the strategies to deal with other issues. Thank you.
Thank you, President. There are some privileges in being lost in the pecking order, because now most of the questions have been answered. the issue, you're perfectly right, the forward is practically a copy and paste from the previous year, and I just want to explain where we come there. According to the Treasury guidelines, we should be submitting a strategic plan once every 5 years, and then updated annually, just with updates with annexures when we resubmit the annual performance plan. But this is a new thing, this performance reporting. The whole thing, we're learning it. This is our third plan that we've been submitting. We were supposed to submit the one for 5 years, but then and update to the APPs. But then when the auditors come, they pick up, there's a mistake here. The order is slightly wrong, we've got too many indicators, take away those indicators. So with the assistance of the process, we had the first plan, and we submitted the second plan before we had results of the first plan's audit. Now we've had the first plan's audit, and based on the first year that we did it in this format, we've made further changes based on the auditor's recommendations. But the essence of the strategic plan, which is supposed to cover the term of office of the minister, has not changed.
and that is why those four words have not changed. It is the content and the manner in which we technically represent and measure it, and that is what's really changed. And it's been confusing to everyone involved, and I apologize if I've created more confusion now than answering. The second question which we've been having is a comment about the regulation of hospitals. I do think this whole market price, market inquiry by the Competition Commission could lead to strong recommendations on how market conduct should be regulated, and that market conduct has to be regulated, and that controls the regulation of healthcare prices in a certain way. How it will come about, what the mechanisms are, is all up for discussion, but we've got a market inquiry and that will inform that process. Of course, in the amendment bill, which we're proposing as well, is to collect more information on hospital and hospital utilization. We don't intend to regulate hospitals, but I do think it is something that's very important and closely aligned to our core mandate to understand what happens in private hospitals and what that information is, and to give certain powers to the office to deal with that. I think that's that part. There's some questions which didn't really go answered in terms of co-payments and the levies that get charged by pharmacies. The levies charged on medicines is regulated. Schemes, all pharmacists must charge a regulated levy. There cannot be any differences there, deviations from the law. But the issue which was raised is the co-payments. Members frequently face co-payments and they don't know. And it's very difficult, and I think that's part of the issue that we need to deal with through the proposed price determination project, because people must know. If you've done this market inquiry, you've got an authority determining prices, then a scheme must pay a certain amount and a doctor must charge a certain amount. If you deal with that, it will protect members of the public, but we're a long way from there. What can be done in the meantime? The National Health Act offers members of the public protection. It says that a doctor must give full information to the member, to the patient, whenever he treats him in terms of costs. There should not be surprises. Once you've seen your doctor, he should warn you. Listen, you're going to face a co-payment. Or no, your scheme will pay. But that is a responsibility of the doctor, and the public doesn't know that. Lastly, the other question we have, the biologicals. There was a question about biologicals. That's always a challenge in the development of these new medications. They frequently come on the market. They're very, very expensive. They're very well marketed. But time shows you that many of these new products that have been entered over decades, many of them are not shown to be more effective or better than existing or other remedies. Some of them bring new disadvantages, some of them bring new side effects. But in general, schemes, those treatments are not at the, so what we call a B&B level of care. In other words, schemes do not have to pay for most biologicals, except those singular ones which actually have been shown to be very effective and have been shown to be cost-effective and affordable as well. And unfortunately, with new developments, we all know the new BMW costs much, much more than the Chico. And you can ride a Chico, it's fine with it. And that's cost-effective and it's affordable. The 7 Series is not. And that's what we're dealing with. The last thing, we will be in 20 years of NHI. Medical schemes, I can't try to be a soothsayer. We never understand how things are going to happen as we progress, but we can look at other developed countries and developing countries with well-developed national health insurance systems always have a private health insurance environment. The size of that insurance and the market differs. Australia is around 20-30%, in the UK it's about 10-15%, where they have a fully developed system. So that system still needs to be regulated. Because if you fail to regulate the balance between the publicly funded and the public NHI and its private systems, you get the problem that you face in Chile. In Chile, they have not done so.
So all the young and healthy in the private and the sick and old are the responsibilities of the state. And that has not been regulated properly, and it causes serious imbalances. But this business of regulating this environment will be there long after we've all retired. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we need just two people, the department and Dr. Zofa. The problem is time. Apparently, today we are going to be listening to the president answering questions, so we've got, all of us have got to be there. And secondly, there's a multi-party caucus, women caucus. It has got to be women. Multi-women caucus, okay. So I'll just give over to the department. Let me start with the Dr. Zofa and then the department. And then we can call it a day. Before you move, Mureti, honorable, there are invitations here that I want to mention. That there's an invitation by the Department of Health to Well TB Day, which is going to be on Sunday. For those who are heathens who don't go to church on Sunday, it's going to be in Cape Town in Kaiwita. Next week, we are invited by the Department of Agriculture and Forestry. They are looking at the donkey meat, so they want health to be part of that. Whether there's donkey meat in the meat that we eat or there's no donkey meat. So they want us to be there as health. Let me give over to Dr. Zofa and then let nobody must take that donkey meat as the. I hope there are no journalists are going to take that donkey meat.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. Thanks for the opportunity. I think it's fair to say that we are in a relationship building mode between BHF and the Council for Medical Schemes. It's a pity that we did experience a rough patch, but I'll give the context of the rough patch. But that rough patch did not erode the relationships. That rough patch just pointed in a direction that we would build more relationships with the Council for Medical Schemes. Concretely, in October, the registrar, Dr. Ganjo, and myself, and your corporate person and mine met and agreed on certain things that we want to do together. There's a meeting scheduled between my chairman and Professor Verabaya for the 16th of April to explore various issues in terms of how we work together. The overarching strategy and what we see here is that we have the regulator on one side, regulating the medical schemes, and within those medical schemes we've got 3.8 cents per member and 8.5 million lives. On the other side, you've got BHF, which is a representative body of the medical schemes and medical scheme administrators and managed care organizations, and within that, the same 8.5 million miles are there. So there's a common factor here. We have the same constituents with the same base, but we protrude in different directions in terms of one being regulator, not being an industry body, but the target area is the same. So it makes sense for the two parties to work together. Now, when it comes to the PMB Regulation 8 issue, I think that issue is far from being over, and it's not caused by BHF or the council or the regulator. It's caused by the gap in the legislation. The gap in the legislation is that it is not regulating the prices that providers will charge. Now, if you insist that whenever somebody is a Medicare scheme member, goes to a provider, and that provider can charge whatever he wants, and then the medical aid must pay that provider in full whatever he wants. And the money that the medical aid will use to pay that provider whatever he wants comes from a member. Therein lies our concern, not the payment in full. So we went to court to find a clarification because of this lacuna where the provider can charge whatever he charges. Is it correct to interpret Regulation 8 that we must pay whatever the provider charges? Because that can lead to a situation where medical aid can be accused of having utilized membership money recklessly because they're just paying whatever the provider charges. That was our concern, and that's a clarification we wanted from the courts. And unfortunately, we did not get that clarification. That's why I'm saying that it's far from being over. When it comes to the issues of the levies, my communication with the registrar is clear. The regulator, the CMS, is underfunded. You can't have a situation where a 110 billion rand industry is allowed by legislation to have 10% of that as managed and administered which is about 10 million rand. That's what the 98 medical schemes have in the possession. That's what the administrators have. They've got 10 billion rand to manage and administer medical schemes. How much does the regulator have? 100 million rand, 0.1%. So we're playing games. The difficulty we have whenever the levies go up is where is the balancing act? Because if on one side of the equation, the contribution that medical aid must charge for various options is kept at the inflation. That is, you can't charge more than what the inflation wants. You kept it there. And then the levies you want as a regulator are more than the cap. There's a gap there of about 3-4%. Now the question I'm asking, where is this 3-4% going to come from? Because you've kept us this side in terms of income. You want more on this side, this is going to come from. But at the same time you're saying, U.S. medical schemes, you must have a minimum solvency ratio of 20%. So we're saying, where's the balancing? How do we balance this? But that's the concern that we have. That's the game that we're facing. When it comes to the issue of the fraudulent activities and the rest, we estimate that about 6-8%, I see the 22 million rand. I don't know where the journalist got that from, but we estimate about 6-8 billion rand. Say 6-8% of what gets paid out, which comes about 6-8 billion rand, is related to fraud. Now, some of the fraud is done by the various lacunas in the system. One lacuna I can find and mention is the coding system. I don't know what the regulator has in mind when it comes to procedure coding, because the various providers are playing around with those codes when they submit their claims. And some of those codes are used fraudulently. And the verification of those codes becomes a problem. And again, the coding system in place is not even under the control of a neutral party, like with the Department of Health. It's under the control of a professional body that is running it. And they're pushing right now for an adoption of a particular coding system them. And some of the fraudulent activity is related to the fact that if I'm a healthcare provider, if I can code this diagnosis that I've found out from which as a PMV, I can then charge whatever I want to charge because it must be paid in full. Mm-hmm. A patient may be suffering from something different, but if I claim that that patient from something different, I'm not going to get as much as I would mm-hmm. if I were to make that diagnosis as a PMV because I can claim more.
I just want to request you because I can see they are very jittery now.
Okay.
Because they want to have lunch before they go to this meeting and then they go to the president. But I would still want us to meet probably, I'm volunteering myself, that the registrar, yourself and myself and probably somebody from the department, we can sit down and look at some of the things. I'm interested. I'm very interested. Mm. Maybe just 1 minute I want to give to Dr. Anba. But I'm not really cutting you off because this is very important. This is very important, that information. But the problem is time. Can I just ask you, Anba, just a few minutes, Anba?
I was suggesting that why can't we make a day, if possible, that he must come and give us the information. Because the more he gives information, the more curious we want to have some explanation done. Now, I'm not satisfied that maybe we lose that. If possible,
In fact, when I was saying I want the three of us to meet, and then we call a meeting, we actually bring that. But maybe before you, let's see. You know, I think let's tell some of the committed, I nearly said comrades, but you are a comrade. I think we need to appreciate certain things. You know, Honorable Hanan just got a message this morning that his brother had died. But he managed to stay here and contribute. And in fact, it's very interesting because we were saying before that he must go. He's saying, but I'm not a forensic pathologist because he's already dead. All I'm going there is to
much, Honourable Financial Day. You feel free to go, so but inform us as to what is going to be happening, so that those of us who would be around could go to Mangaung and for the better. Just one.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe another session will be necessary, but just to say that I think on the issues of levies and pricing, I think the commission that the Competition Commission is running may be able to deal with some of that, and I think when we come back we can talk about that. I think the issues around fraud are quite difficult, and I think Dr. Zukufa was highlighting that there's only an estimate. Because remember, in the case of medical aid fraud, it's not just the provider, it's the patient who is party to the fraud. It's not one-sided. In many cases, it's the patient who's part of the process. So it's very difficult to then get to the bottom of what actually is the extent of it. But I think maybe next time when we come, we can give more detail.
Thanks very much. Members, thank you very much. Mainly to you, Honorable Khanada. CMS will always congratulate you for your unqualified audit report. Thank you very much. We usually don't have problems with you when we call you. It's straightforward and to the point. We're waiting for your bill. Bring it while we're still here. Because if we go, you'll have to start all over again with the new people. So bring it while we're here so that we can do that. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, Department.
Then I have boxes of things so that sometimes they have passengers when they are in pain. So I can't do it. That's why I'm saying, if they presentation, if they cut and paste the presentation, because sometimes they come with the same presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's why I always keep them. For example, the conversation, the other commission conversation, they came with the same presentation. That tells the date. So that's why sometimes we keep them, because we can trap them.
Mm-hmm.
We can be able to trap them. What is this child? It's nearly 1 o'clock. But I'm thinking about this child. Who put on Ghana one and where's the child? Hey, where is he? Let me take to my mother. For this child, what is he? And you go, wah, but then you go,
oh, yeah.
Okay, my baby.
Yeah.
I thought that you are left. Yes, I knew you were
looking. Oh, yes, that's right.